Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. I have Monty Ashley joining me tonight. Monty, thank you for joining me.
I am delighted to be here, Scott, for my fourth appearance.
I'm glad you looked it up, because I was going to say for your third appearance, and apparently it is your fourth appearance. So congratulations on being on one more time than I thought you were on.
No, I watched iMUD from the original series.
Oh, I remember that.
I watched an Enterprise episode that I do not remember the name of, but it involved an asteroid.
Oh, yes. That was not a good episode.
And I watched a Deep Space Nine episode of some description.
Yes, I don't remember which one, but we have already watched another Deep Space Nine episode. But before we talk about that, Monty, tell the people a little bit about yourself.
My name's Monty. That's
I stumped you with this question.
M-O-N-T-Y.
Oh.
I am a member of the Incomparable. I am the co-host of the podcast The Villain Edit, where we discuss low to mid-tier reality shows.
What do you think of what I like to call this new kind of genre of reality show that is the more gentle reality show, which I think is probably most typically defined by the Great British Bake Off or the Great British Baking Show, depending on where you're watching it.
I love it. One of the things I do not like about reality shows is how much they are just built around people shouting at each other.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons I like Face Off is that people help each other all the time, even though they are in competition. Somebody will be like, oh my God, I can't get my mold open. And everybody else rushes over to help, which is such a nice change from a show like Project Runway, where someone says, I'm having trouble with my dress. And then you'll see an interview segment where people say, I'm not surprised she's having trouble with her dress. That thing looks like a trash bag. People are too mean.
In general, I think people are too mean. And I agree. And that's why I think, I remember we talked about Forged in Fire, which I believe is my favorite reality show.
Oh, I love Forged in Fire. And they're very nice on that show, too.
They are. And even the judges are pretty nice. They're kind of like, you know, this is not very nice, but I appreciate the effort that you put into it. And I loved watching you work, even though this is a piece of crap.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, they're so nice.
And they'll help each other. Like, there was a recent episode where somebody said, I need a magnet, and somebody just handed him a magnet immediately instead of cackling. It turns out that a magnet tells you if your steel has been tempered properly.
Hmm. And I told Marisa, who is my wife, who I forced to watch Forged in Fire with me. I don't really force her to watch it. She was reticent to watch it with me the first time, but I feel like it's one of these shows that you think, I'm not going to be interested in this, and then you start watching it, and you're like, turns out I'm super interested in forging.
I want to forge something so bad.
Oh, so do I. But I think this is what I was saying. I feel like I shouldn't do it, because every time they drop something, I think, why don't you just pick it up? And then I realize, because it is super hot. Don't.
Yeah. Look what color that is. That's bright orange. Don't touch that.
Yeah, my brain for a split second says, you should just pick that up, which I know means if I find myself in a forge and I will drop something, I will just, for a split second, think, I should pick that up, and I'll try to pick it up, and then I'll only have one hand. That's probably not great.
And in this season of Forged in Fire, they have a warning at the beginning saying, this is very dangerous, because some dum-dum burned down his house.
I hadn't looked into it, but I assume that's why they put that out there, because
yep.
It doesn't seem like a good idea. But it makes it, the problem with it is that the people who are on it are so good at it, even the ones that aren't gonna win, they're very good at it. And so you're like, well, I could do that. They're all doing it
like,
so
I've
well.
I've watched enough that I have opinions on some things. I'm like, canister Damascus. That's a very tricky technique. I would do a San Mai instead. I'm like, but really, I don't know how to forge weld things. I just know what the words are.
That's right. You have opinions about things that you know nothing about, which I yep. appreciate. And my wife has made the observation that the Colby, I think, is who is the host, seems to have become much more knowledgeable about forging than he was in the very beginning of the show. So kudos to him.
That's Will.
Oh, Will. Who am I thinking of? I don't know who I'm thinking of.
Might be thinking about Colby from Survivor, who hosted a couple of
Did he host like Top Shot? Did you ever watch Top
Shot?
Yes,
he hosted Top Shot.
That is
right.
What I'm thinking of.
Oh man, Top Shot. All right. So on one end of the scale, you have a show like Face Off where people say, well, I'm going to have to do really well on this challenge to beat Walter because Walter is really good and I really admire his work. And like that, I like that because, you know, you're putting your opponent over, like in wrestling terms. That way, if you beat him, you look good. And if he beats you, you still, you know, you weren't calling him awful. Mm. On the entire other end of the spectrum, you have the jerks on Top Shot who are all just the meanest, worst people.
It's true. Although that is one of the shows. Oh, man, I missed that show so much.
I've watched every episode of that show. And, like, it's dangerous to say mean things about those guys because they're all really good at firearms.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, so often on that show, people get real judgy about, he was just lucky. Like, well, he couldn't have been that lucky. Like, he's really good with that rifle.
You know, luck is a small part, I'm sure, but there's a lot more to it.
Yeah. Now, the people that complain about it being 95% a shooting competition, and then one challenge will be throwing tomahawks or something, and that's what they got sent out on, I agree you can complain about that.
Yes, that does feel a little bit like a bait and switch. Like,
yeah.
I am a competitive shooter. I do not know how to throw a javelin. Why are you making me do this?
Right. And, of course, there's one person there because they're really good at thrown weapons. They're like, I know you want to send me home because the first 3 weeks have all been shooting challenges, but eventually there's going to be a throwing challenge and you want me around for that.
That's right. You just have, I'm a long-term investment. Trust me.
Yep.
Oh, Top Shots. Well, I guess we should, now I have no transition to this episode of Star Trek now, but a bunch of people get shot in this episode. Yep. So
I looked up the credits while we were talking and the, makeup designer and supervisor for this episode, Michael Westmore. Film editing, Michael Westmore II.
Oh, this has got Westmores all over the place.
Yes.
And I have no idea who any of them are, but apparently I've enjoyed their work for a long time. So thank you to the Westmore clan.
If you enjoy what a Star Trek alien looks like after the original series, Michael Westmore did it.
Well, then I enjoy much of his work. So once again, I say, Michael Westmore, good job. I'm always impressed by how good the makeup looks on Star Trek, because I am sure that Michael Westmore and the rest of the people he worked with did not have a huge budget or a lot of time. And so I know a lot of people are annoyed because every alien just has like a little weird thing on their forehead or something. But given the constraints, I think they do a fantastic job.
Like, they don't all have that. It's just... eventually, you're like, the Klingons have so much head stuff. Can we just shorten this one? And I think Michael Westmore is the guy who said, let's just make new Klingon makeup. I don't care.
And I think that is, and this is going to be controversial for some people listening, but I think that's the right call because really.
It was the right call.
It's just a TV show. It's fine. It's all right. The Klingons always look different. It's just a thing. But let's talk about, so the episode we watched, Deep Space Nine episode, or even Deep Space Nine episode, I'm so excited. M'Pok Noor, which is season 5, episode 24, late in the run of Deep Space Nine, and late in the fifth season. But this is not a story that is part of an arc. I mean, you don't even really need to know much about what's going on in the rest of the season, other than there's a war happening, and even then, you don't really need to know that. You just need to know that Chief O'Brien killed some people earlier, although they mentioned that several times, so you're not going to forget that.
It will be brought up.
That's right.
To the point where the other characters are like, why do you keep bringing that up? We know.
I mean, this is one of my favorite kind of subgenres of Star Trek episodes, in that I like to call it, all the named characters are on my team. Everybody else go over there.
Yes.
And you think, I don't think this is going to turn out well for the people I have never seen before.
Well, as someone who has not watched a great deal of Deep Space Nine, I was willing to believe that one or two of the, I guess, I can't call them secondary characters, but they're secondary characters in this episode.
They are.
I was willing to believe they had been around before.
Yes,
they were pure red shirts, or
they were pure red shirts. They only appear in this episode. Somebody may be typing a furious email to me about that Bolian appearing in a different episode, but I'm pretty sure that this is the only episode any of them show up in. But I could be wrong.
Well, I thought they did a pretty good job of implying a previous existence for them.
Yes.
There's a lot of, how did I let you talk me into this? Which, all right, maybe those two have a past. I don't know.
Well, you get the sense that the two engineers, bad things are happening on Deep Space Nine. Stuff's breaking down. Chief O'Brien needs some spare parts. They can't replicate them and so they need to go to an abandoned, of course, they need to go to an abandoned version of Deep Space Nine and get themselves some parts that they can't replicate on Deep Space Nine because of reasons. There's a scene that sets that up. It's not really that important. It's kind of fun because Quark is sad because they're doing work in his bar and nobody's there because it's loud. But it's not really.
And then they decide to go to the Klingon restaurant instead. And I have a lot of questions all of a sudden.
Ooh, what are your questions?
One, what are the dining options on Deep Space Nine?
There are a surprising number of dining options on Deep Space Nine. You've got the Replimat. So you go there, and I don't really understand. I should say I don't really understand how any of this works, since the Federation doesn't have money.
Right. So why is everybody going to Quark's place, the one place that requires money?
I don't really understand how it works. So Deep Space Nine, Bajor is not technically part of the Federation yet. Deep Space Nine is an outpost that the Federation is kind of running to help the Bajorans. So I assume Bajorans have money, and certainly Ferengi have money because that's kind of their thing.
That's literally all they have.
That's right. So, but I don't really understand the economics of Deep Space Nine, and I don't really understand, and I had to talk about with Tony Sindelar about this, like why. So replicators, amazing. They're in your quarters. They'll make you anything you want to eat. Why do you have to go to Quark's? Because he basically replicates things for you.
Yeah. Well, because you want the social aspect. Right, like, you can't just spend all your time in your quarters.
You can't? I feel like you can. But that is true.
Next question is about the Klingon restaurant.
Oh, all right.
What do Klingons eat, and do humans really want to go there? Because they were real, like, yeah, let's go to the Klingon place. This isn't like the Italian place or the Thai place. Like,
well, so Klingons eat a lot of ga, which is the only Klingon cuisine that I know, which is live bloodworms.
Sure, that tracks. I assumed it was to be something live.
Yes, and apparently humans can eat it because in a Next Generation episode, William Riker eats a bunch of it, and he's fine.
All right.
And people go to this Klingon restaurant, and the proprietor of the Klingon restaurant, who we do meet, though not in this episode, is a big fan of Klingon opera, so he often sings Klingon opera as he gives you the food.
Oh, boy, that sounds exhausting. I assumed Quark was one of the worst restaurateurs. Maybe just all people who own restaurants in Star Trek are exhausting.
There is a surprising number of restaurateurs in Deep Space Nine, because Benjamin Sisko's father, and Benjamin Sisko, who is very briefly in this episode, owns a restaurant in New Orleans. And I have many questions about that, too, because that is totally within the Federation, because the Earth is headquartered. The Federation is headquartered on the Earth. So I'm like, who works at this restaurant? And why, if you don't need money and you have replicators, so you don't have to work, one assumes, why would you choose to be – and there's – now, before I say this, I have nothing but respect for people in the service industry.
But why would anyone choose to be that?
If – for free. Like, they're you're not getting paid. There is no money. So why would you want to be – being a waiter is a very difficult job. And if you're not getting paid for it, I don't understand why you would do it.
Maybe in the future they have seen the movie The Princess and the Frog a lot, and I vaguely remember a huge plot point of that being, if only I could open my restaurant in New Orleans.
Ah, well, then that checks out, I think, probably. So that is the restaurant scene of Star Trek, as far as I can remember. There are probably some other restaurants, but
all right.
That's people go to the Klingon restaurant a lot. I assume only because of the Klingon food. that I imagine is fresh. So not actually replicated, but I could be wrong.
Because you said live bloodworms.
Exactly. And in that TNG episode, William Riker was on he was basically like doing an exchange with a Klingon vessel. So before he went, he had the replicator make a whole bunch of Klingon food, and it made Ga, but it wasn't live Ga. And then when he got to the ship, they, of course, only eat live Ga, and they were quite titillated to watch him eat it. But that's neither here nor there. Right.
Anyway, that scene was just to cram some of the opening credits cast in so they had met their contractual obligation before leaving.
Exactly. They need to be on a certain number of episodes a season. By golly, you will be in one scene on this episode that has nothing to do with you. And there you go. So Odo gets to be like, well, it's probably booby-trapped. And that's, it turns out he's right. Ben Sisko is like, sure, Chief O'Brien, you can go to this random space station that's booby-trapped and in Dominion territory, but only take, four people that we've never met before, a cadet, and the Cardassian Taylor, who we all know isn't really a Taylor, but you might as well take him with you.
He's not a tailor, but he kept talking about tailoring stuff.
He is a tailor. He calls himself, he's just a simple tailor, is Garak's line. But everyone knows that he is more than just a simple tailor.
He just wanted a bigger area to make dresses.
That is true. I did like that detail about, because Chief O'Brien is like, why are you coming, Garak? You don't usually do these things. And Garak says, well, I need a bigger space for my dress making machines, a la RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yeah.
See?
I thought he was pretty cheerful about checking out those booby traps, too.
Garak is one of my favorite Star Trek characters because he is not like any character really that we have seen in Star Trek, maybe with the exception of some characters in Discovery, because he's not part of the Federation. He has a mysterious past. He clearly is just looking out for himself. In this episode, he kills a bunch of people, which everybody's kind of cool with, which I don't really understand, but he was kind of under psychotropic drugs, so I guess that's okay.
It's not my fault, Your Honor. I was zooted to the moon on goofballs. Well, all right.
If you insist. But he's very interesting. He helps out a lot. The Cardassians want him dead. The Federation has him, lets him be on Deep Space Nine basically because he can be helpful in situations where a Cardassian is needed, and he is the most handy Cardassian. And he has an interesting relationship with Julian Bashir. And he really enjoys needling Chief O'Brien for seemingly no reason, but it comes out towards the end that I guess it's kind of a theme of the show that we could talk about. And then, of course, Nog, who is everybody's favorite Ferengi Starfleet cadet.
Is that true?
Well, he is the only Klingon Ferengi cadet, so he has to be everybody's favorite.
Still seems like a high ranking to me.
Well, he is. I mean, I don't know if he's everyone's favorite Ferengi, because I think that Quark probably takes that spot. Or, well, the Grand Nagus. A lot of people like the Grand Nagus, because Sean Wallace plays the Grand Nagus, so he gets that. But Nog is certainly within the top five Ferengi in Star Trek.
All right.
Because I think most people can only name five Ferengi in Star Trek, but that's okay. And
he seems to me like he can't decide what he's about.
Yeah, he's a tough one, that like Nog.
60% of his lines are how hard he's trying to be a perfect little Federation cadet, junior engineer and all that. But then when the plot requires it, he's also pure Ferengi, and those don't really line up super well.
Before we go any further, I'd like to stop and thank our sponsor. Podcast listeners are invited to take advantage of Casper's competitive limited time 4th of July offer. Casper is the place to shop for 4th of July mattresses this year. Claim your independence from overpriced mattresses. With three lines to choose from, including the original Casper, the innovative Wave, and the streamlined Essential, every Casper mattress is designed to help you sleep cool and regulate your body temperature throughout the night. Plus, you can be sure of your purchase with Casper's 100-night risk-free sleep-on-it trial, and returns are hassle-free if you're not completely satisfied. For a limited time, visit casper.com/savings and save up to $225 off your order. This is a limited time offer only. This special offer expires July 9th, 2018. Terms and conditions apply. That's casper.com/savings to save up to $225 off your order, valid until July 9th, 2018. My thanks to Casper for sponsoring Random Trek. Now back to the episode. But I will say that they, well, this is something that I like to point out a lot about Star Trek, the casual racism. So yeah. All Ferengi are pretty much this caricature of greedy, craven people, and Nog is trying to go against type and be more selfless and be interested in something other than profit, but the writers cannot help but have right. him, you know, dip into his Ferengi heritage when it suits them.
Right. Like, there's a scene in this episode where he and the Cardassian are playing a board game. Mm-hmm. And they're coming at it from their individual points of view, which is a neat idea, but it's kind of weird that they're coming at it from their generically race-based points of view. Right? Like, Garak isn't being Garak. He's being, I am Cardassian. Cardassians are always aggressive and attack, so that is how you must play this board game. And Nog is like, I am Ferengi. I must protect all of my assets because that is what Ferengi do. I'm like, that's doesn't really feel like what either of those characters act like outside of a board game.
Yes, because Garak pretty much, he doesn't do things by brute force. He is a kind of a clever subterfuge kind of dude. So you would think he would try that. But I guess what they're saying is that particular game, which is a Cardassian game, one should be as aggressive as possible because, as we know, all Cardassians are super aggressive because casual racism is fine.
I like that Cardassians play board games. That's kind of an interesting detail.
Yes, and that board game, you know, they set it up in the little runabout scene, and then it comes back later in a much creepier scene later on when Garak has, after Garak's killed a couple people, and he finds one of those board games on the station, and he sets it up.
Yeah.
Which I thought was quite an effective scene, and I particularly liked when Chief O'Brien came on to Ops and he finds it on the little railing and he knocks it over out of spite.
That's so mean. Because Garak sent that message saying, I found this game, and I found every single piece.
And there are a lot of pieces.
Yeah.
That's what it made me so happy when Chief O'Brien looked at it. And he did not have to do that. It was a conscious decision. He saw that and he was like, I am knocking that over. And I liked it. The other thing I liked about this episode is that I enjoy Chief O'Brien as a character. And they always kind of – what the writers like to do with Chief O'Brien is torture Chief O'Brien. So this is one of the Let's Torture Chief O'Brien episodes because Chief O'Brien has this history where he was a soldier and he was involved in a war and he saw a lot of action and he killed a bunch of Cardassians. And they kind of have this throughout the seasons, this backstory of him coming to grips with his not even casual racism, but his active racism towards Cardassians and getting over it and coming to grips with what he had done. And he says numerous times in this episode that he is no longer a soldier, but he is an engineer. Garak doesn't really buy this because – and I'm kind of on Garak's side because I know the Federation, Starfleet always says, you know, we're not warriors, we're explorers. They have a lot of weapons.
Okay. We're a peace-loving organization with military ranks, and this is a strictly exploratory vehicle bristling with cannons.
Exactly. It seems, you know, on the one hand, I agree with the scientific mission of Starfleet, but on the other hand, you got a lot of photon torpedoes for just some scientists.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. So I believe that Chief O'Brien is generally – his primary aspect is engineer, but he certainly has training and he's killed a bunch of people. So he is in war, in a battle, right? He's not like a homicidal maniac as far as we know. And so he's grappling with that, and Garak spends a lot of time, even before he is under the influence of this psychotropic drug, kind of picking at Chief O'Brien and saying, oh, tell us the story about, I forget what the name of the planet was, the Battle of Setlik 3, because Chief O'Brien was apparently the hero of Setlik 3, where he killed X number of Cardassians. We don't quite know. Garak really is interested to know how many Cardassians Chief O'Brien has killed. Chief O'Brien is not going to play that game. But I think we all know that Chief O'Brien probably knows the exact number of Cardassians he's killed, but he will not tell Garak.
Yeah, you don't get a title like hero unless there's been like paperwork and stuff.
It's true. And this episode, so Chief O'Brien is an enlisted person, so he's not an officer. So this has a lot of little details where, you know, Nog calls him sir, and Chief O'Brien's like, you can come along just the next time you call me sir. I'm going to like throw you out an airlock or something. I forget what he says, but it wasn't that violent. And
right. He prefers being called chief, which is also a military title. So yes. I don't know what he's getting at.
Well, but he's not an officer, so he doesn't want to be called sir.
All right.
He's a complicated man, that Chief O'Brien. I wonder if Nog tried to call him Miles. I don't think he would have liked that at all. So. But I did like that interplay between Garak is like, come on, Chief, I know there's a killer inside of you, even before they get onto the station. And Chief O'Brien's like, no, I did what I had to do. I was, you know, protecting my people, and that's it. I am an engineer now. Let's talk about boring engineering stuff. And Garak is like, well, I kind of want to talk about killing people. Chief O'Brien is having none of it. And then there's a bunch of other people that we really don't need to talk about, but there are, what, four other people?
Oh, we're gonna, though.
Well, all right. Well, there's a Bolian, and then there is some guy who's super interested in finding Cardassian insignia.
Let's talk about that guy. His name's Bichetti or Machete or something.
Okay. Yes, I think
he's the equivalent of, like, a Civil War reenactor, because he wants, like, Cardassian badges and stuff. Like, he wants military memorabilia, but that war is still going on. That's weird, right?
It is pretty weird.
Why are you collecting memorabilia during the war? It's not nostalgic yet.
Well, I felt like maybe. So in World War II, I think that many soldiers on the Allied side gathered up Nazi stuff as
they
war trophies,
up,
I guess. I don't know.
But they weren't like, ooh, I'm looking for something from the 4th Luftwaffe Battalion.
It's true.
You don't do that.
This guy was clearly a particular collector. Like, he had like a list of things that he wanted, and he wanted to check them off.
And somehow that got added to the official list of stuff we're here to collect when they get to the station. And the way they divided their team up was, all right, us two, we're going to get the essential stuff, the plot important stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You two go look for the tier two stuff. And then somebody else is actually put on detail for find the stuff that isn't important at all.
I did question that decision.
Shouldn't they all be looking for everything? Like, what if the people on the nice to have team see polarity maximizer? I wrote down a lot of crazy technobabble stuff from this episode because they were saying it every 30 seconds.
It's true. Yeah, you would think that everybody would look for it, and that no one would be looking for insignia except for the creepy Pichetti guy who wants to get them.
But I liked that somebody who is doomed, they took the time to give him a name, give him a ridiculous goal, give him a relationship to one of the other characters. That fooled me into thinking maybe this is somebody who has been seen on Deep Space Nine before.
And you would be wrong about that. This is his first and last appearance because, spoiler alert, he gets killed.
Whoops!
But I do think that I agree with you that they put a lot of effort into and in very quickly gave these characters little backstories and quirks that make you think, oh, maybe they won't kill all of these characters. Yeah.
Maybe these people trapped in a haunted space station
will be
that
fine.
They can't escape from plot. Maybe they'll be okay.
It turns out not so much. And so there's Pichetti. There's Bokta. Bokta, is that how you say it? That's the Bolian, I believe, the blue dude, who is the one that says, Pichetti, you talked me into this. You said, you know, we...
Yeah.
I don't even know how they talked him into it, but...
He's also the one that later on says, maybe we shouldn't split up.
Which is smart. 2 points to him. because he was right. He is not interested in this. He doesn't want to be here. He doesn't want a phaser. Pichetti is the one that's like, how often do engineers get to use phasers? And you get the feeling that the Bolian became an engineer because he didn't want to use a phaser. But that doesn't stop them. And then we've got the two security people, I think, Stolovs, something, who is kind of like a, she's the woman, who was good at, like, marksmanship in the academy, I believe is the thing they say about her, or something like that.
Yeah.
And she's like, I'll keep you safe. And then there's some dude, Amaro, I guess?
He's the dude that doesn't know the difference between a coil spanner and a flux coupler.
That's right, much
this guy.
And he gets killed by a flux coupler. I mean, it gets shoved into his stomach by Garrick, so it's not like it randomly kills him, but...
That makes sense, because it wasn't coiled at all, so I did briefly think, that can't be a coil spanner.
It's true, and that's he paid for his ignorance. And so those are the people. You don't. I will warn you, if you have, for some reason, you're listening to this podcast before you've watched this episode... we've already ruined it for you. Don't get attached to any of those four characters because they don't make it out. They all die, which was surprising. I had seen this episode before, but I was surprised the first time I saw it that they killed all of them because I figured they're going to kill one or two of them. But nope, it's a clean sweep. They kill everybody who you've never seen before.
Yep.
Including the two or three stasis Cardassians, although one was dead before they got onto the station. And nobody's seen... Well, we'll get to that scene, because I think it's a weird scene, too. So they get on the station. We've got our brave band of adventurers. They come across the abandoned dungeon. I mean, space station.
Station.
That's right. They need to get on. They're like, Chief O'Brien is like, well, let's transport on there. Garrick... proving immediately useful, says maybe you shouldn't do that because there are pattern mixers that'll mix up the patterns and everyone will die, one assumes, which seems like something Chief O'Brien, as a former transporter chief, would have guessed, but whatever.
Maybe the Enterprise should get some of those because I feel like it's pretty frequent that bad guys transport onto whatever place the show is based on.
That is very true, but it would make the writers' lives much more difficult if they were all equipped with that. So they're not going to be. And so there's some scenes that don't really, like, they make this big deal about docking, but it's like a 2-second scene that Garrick just like presses a button and all the power on the station comes back on from a docking, bay, which didn't make much sense to me, but whatever. They get onto the station, they split up into teams, and you think, oh, you shouldn't split the party, but they do. And then we see the stasis chambers, I think, and there are two that have living Cardassians in it, one with a dead Cardassian. They wake up, they quickly go off into the station, and I guess they have been awoken by the fact that people are on the station. And
I don't think that's right. They were already out of their tubes by the time our team shows up. The tubes have recently opened.
I thought they opened when the team first got there.
Maybe they opened when the team first docks, but yes. By the time they get to the stasis tube room.
That is correct. Because then they very quickly, the two Cardassians very quickly scurry off to cause havoc. And the first thing one does is go to where the runabout is docked and undock it and somehow get it to explode. I'm not quite sure how, but...
in retrospect, dumb idea. You could have put a bomb on it or something. Then when these guys leave, blow it up. I don't know. Just thinking out loud here.
That would have been more effective. Although, as we find out, there is this drug, I guess, that's being pumped throughout the station, I guess, that only affects Cardassians, that makes them super racist.
No, that's not it, because they attack each other, too.
That's true. So like, just Garrick attacks super aggressive?
Yeah.
It enhances their aggression, as previously discussed with the board game. See, it all comes together. And my favorite thing, though, is when Nog runs up to get some tool that he left in the runabout, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but he has to do that so that he can go and see it blow up. He watches it, and I think he may say something like, that's not good, or something like that.
Yeah.
And I thought, yep, that's right.
I was worried they were going to blame him. Like, I was picturing, like, maybe from now on, the whole plot is, Nog, what did you do now? I didn't do it. There's a Cardassian trying to kill me. Kid, you play.
They should have never let Ferengi into Starfleet. This is what happens when you let Ferengi in anywhere. That is luckily not the plot. Although I did also think it was funny when Nog goes and tells Chief O'Brien what happened. Chief O'Brien says, huh, runabouts don't just undock themselves and explode.
He's an engineer. He knows these things.
That's right. I was like, there's all that engineering training coming for you. But even with that happening, he's like, well, maybe we should still split up. And look for stuff, because we need to now turn the station into basically like a Morse code generator so that we can tell Deep Space Nine that we need help, because the subspace module has been taken out. All technobabble.
So was this mostly just Deep Space Nine sets lit differently?
Yes.
Okay.
This is another favorite subgenre of Star Trek episodes. Let's take sets we already have and change them slightly and make them, and with a lot of different lighting, make it look completely different.
I liked it. The lighting was cool. There was a lot of, you know, tilty cameras and stuff. It felt spooky a lot of the time.
It did. I was watching this in the gym as I was running on the treadmill. And there's a scene where our favorite insignia gatherer has recently split up with the person who is supposed to be watching him. And she goes up to check out something up in the atrium area or something. And he goes off and he sees what else but an insignia that he would like to steal. So he goes to look at it.
Oh boy, a badge.
He goes to look at it and a Cardassian guy like leaps out of like a glass window, I guess, or like a pane of glass or something. And it shatters and it startled me. And I was running on a treadmill and I was startled and I almost fell off the treadmill. That's how startled I was. And I had seen this episode before. So my point is, they effectively get the spooky abandoned space station feel down pretty well. So kudos to them. I also enjoy the fact that Tarok Nor is just Deep Space Nine, like, tilted at an angle.
Yeah.
It's cheap. Don't worry.
Look, the Cardassians may be different, but they know how to build a space station. Exactly like us.
No, well, they are on a Cardassian space station, so it checks out. Everybody, Deep Space Nine is Cardassian space station, Emprok Nor is a space station that is Cardassian, because the Cardassian name for Deep Space Nine is Tarok Nor. So there's a fun thing you don't care about.
Wait. They just stole the station from the Cardassians?
Well, see, this is the backstory, because you haven't seen a lot of Deep Space Nine. The Cardassians.
Did it already have all the restaurant spaces in it, or did they refit those?
It oddly enough, it had the restaurant spaces in it.
Interesting. Okay.
It had the promenade. So the Cardassians occupied Deep Space Nine. Not Deep Space Nine, Bajor. And they put Tarok Nor, as it was called then, in orbit around Bajor to keep the populace subjugated and to mine like dilithium or something on the space station. I don't really understand why they were mining it or processing it on the space station, not mining it. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but whatever. That's what they were doing. And then the beginning of the first episode of Deep Space Nine, the Cardassians are leaving because the Bajoran occupation's over and the Federation's coming in to help Bajor recover from the brutal occupation that the Cardassians had put them through.
Now, as we all know from the beginning of the episode Empok Nor, whenever the Cardassians leave a space station, they fill it with booby traps.
Mm-hmm.
Did they do that in this case?
They did, actually. There are several episodes of Deep Space Nine in which they find heretofore undiscovered booby traps that become critical plot points.
Okay, good.
So it is internally consistent. And so, long story short, all the characters we don't know die. Garak decides, you know what? He starts, like, scratching his neck a lot, which I noticed. And that was kind of, I think, a shorthand for something's not quite right with Garak. And then he starts, he's like, you know what, Chief O'Brien, you need to deal with what you're doing. I'm going to go off and kill these Cardassians.
And I liked that the red shirts, I mean, they weren't red, but, you know, the doomed guys. One of them's like, don't you go anywhere. You do what the chief says. And O'Brien says, actually, go ahead. And then the other red shirt says, I actually feel better with him out doing that. Like, I feel like he might be able to kill those Cardassians better than us. So this seems fine.
Yes. I mean, you, Chief O'Brien knows as a leader, you need to know how to deploy your resources. And Garak is far better at skulking about an abandoned space station, killing people than anyone Chief O'Brien has brought with him.
Right.
So
could have brought Odo. I mean, you knew you were going on a mission critical, very dangerous task. I feel like Odo would have been a good man on this job.
I feel like they should have brought more people with them, just generally.
Yeah.
But I guess there's a budget for this episode. They don't want to spend too much. And if you have more people, it's while still many people could die, two Cardassians can't kill that many people.
Yeah, I mean, if you bring Worf, it's going to be a different adventure.
That's true. It'll be quite short.
Yeah, there's some Cardassians. One moment. There are no more Cardassians.
That's
get
right.
your stupid flux thing and let's go.
Yes. And you're like, suddenly there's no tension in this episode. But that was a cool Batleth fight. And so, yep, everybody dies. The big reveal is that Garak is gone, is being affected by this toxin, and he kills one of the Federation people. Oh, no, it's so sad. But it's one of the least interesting of the characters we've never seen before, so I didn't feel all that
bad. Yeah, they killed those guys in the wrong order. I mean, I get that they wanted to have the scene where the guy's like, Chief, I got this badge. I think Bichetti would have liked it. But Bichetti was the one with a characteristic, so he should have stuck around longer.
Yes. Or I think I would have had the Bolian be killed by Garak, because then you kill the security guy that nobody cares about by having the Cardassian sneak up behind him. Then Garak kills that Cardassian, saving the Bolian. And the Bolian's like, oh, thank God, I knew you would be the one to kill all the Cardassians. And then Garak says, well, yes, but I'm also going to kill you. And he kills the Bolian. I feel like that might have been a little more effective. But I'm not a screenwriter. What do I know? And so Garak kills everybody. He captures Nog because Nog's trying really hard to be
because
vigilant, but it's not working.
And that's when you find out why Nog was sent along on the mission, so there'd be somebody to capture.
That's right. And Garak is like, I really want to kill you, Nog, but I'm not going to because I have to use you as bait to lure Chief O'Brien out. Which he does successfully. And they say, let's meet on the promenade with no weapons. And they're both like, sure. They both bring weapons because, of course, they do.
Oh, yeah.
Nope, you know. Then they put their weapons down. And Chief O'Brien puts his tricorder down and like something else, like some spanner or something that he has in a neat pile. And I thought to myself, even though I had seen this episode, I'd seen it a while ago, I thought to myself, he's putting those down very particularly. I think something's going to happen with them. It turns out I was right, because Chief O'Brien knows Cardassians are very strong. And if you have a fist fight with a Cardassian, you're probably going to lose. So you should blow something up behind them.
Yep. He gets through that line, I'm not a soldier. I'm an engineer.
Exactly.
And then he did some kind of sort of MacGyver-like solution to create a bomb.
Mm-hmm. And knocks Garak out. He doesn't kill Garak because Garak is a character whose name, I believe, appears in the credits. So, you know, he's not going to die. Although I don't remember how they if they deal with any of the repercussions of Garak having killed one of their team members.
At the end, they say that Garak's going in front of a tribunal or something. And O'Brien says something to the effect of, well, I'll tell him you were on those drugs.
Right. And I assume they just don't ever mention that again.
Yeah. But I did really like in that scene that Garak said, I want you to apologize to Amaro's wife for me because I don't think she would accept it from me. Like, oh, they're actually giving some thought to the characters they killed once they're no longer on screen. And I feel like that doesn't always happen on Star Trek.
That's true.
Kirk never comes back to the Enterprise and tells people's next of kin, sorry, salt vampire.
They knew the risks when they were signing up.
Did they? Did it say salt vampire?
Like other dangers as assigned.
Watch out. We're going to a region of space full of godlike brain clouds.
Again. I did think I found that last scene, though, very effective, because Garak is in sickbay and he's kind of resting, and Chief O'Brien says, can I go talk to him, to Julian Bashir? And Julian's like, sure, keep it brief. And so he goes in.
Keep it brief, like my scene in this episode.
Exactly.
Dr. Julian Bashir, out!
Exactly. Thank you for being on.
Thank you for having me. Eventually, I will have seen, I don't know, 3 or 4 more Star Trek episodes.
Probably. That's my guarantee to you. I will make you watch at least 2 more Star Trek episodes.